10. Skin in the game. You spared him, Vesto Slipher said, careful to keep his tone casual. Why? Neither of the Blur siblings answered him. From behind the console, Dakarai inclined slightly forward in his chair, his right forefinger still pressed tightly to the remote deactivation switch for the guard's dropbox. Siddiqui leaned down over her brother's shoulder for a better view. All five of the screens closest to Dakarai's workspace had been redirected to display the maintenance shaft from different angles, providing multiple views of the Zabrak and the guard whose wrist he'd just shattered. Dakarai tapped another button, keying in the initiation sequences.
What's going on? Slipher asked. Is it?
All at once, the very air around them took on a low and sonorous hum. A time code blipped into view in the corners of all the screens, counting down from 5 minutes. Slipher heard a burst of static, and a split second later, a clarion erupted out of the framework of the space station, filling what felt like the entire world with one long, oscillating blast. Dakarai winced. The tremors grew more violent, rhythmic, throbbing like the adrenalized heart of some colossal creature shocked into life. Ripples appeared at the surfaces of his coffee cup, and he reached over to steady it without taking his eyes from the screens.
What is all this? Slipher asked.
He'd already surmised exactly what was happening, but he'd long ago discovered the value of asking obvious questions at the right moment. He turned to Siddiqui, speaking loudly to be heard over the alarms.
What's going on?
My brother's algorithm has selected the next two combatants. The warden smiled at one of the monitors. We're matching them now.
Inmate 11240.
The moon read as the profile appeared on screen.
That's the Zabrak?
Jagannath, Siddiqui said. Right.
And that's why...
She nodded. We'll only override a guard's authority to activate the electrostatic detonator if the inmate in question is already scheduled for a fight. She nodded at the bank of monitors. In this case, 11240 has been selected again.
Who are you pitting him against?
Wait and see, Siddiqui said. I wouldn't want to ruin the surprise. Slipher glanced around at the other screens, where inmates throughout Coghive 7 were scurrying down the corridors and back to their cells for lockdown. The entire space station was shaking hard enough that he had to brace himself against the wall and wrap his thin, slender fingers around the buttress for support. He could feel the whirring and clicking of Coghive 7's interior clockwork through the floor beneath his feet, reverberating up through his ankles and knees.
Is it always this loud? He shouted. It feels like the whole space station is shaking.
Only about 85% of it.
Siddiqui pointed to the space just above the monitors, where a high-resolution ray tracing of the space station's layout was displaying the reconfiguration in real time. Slipher gazed at the rendering in fascinated silence. Numbers had always been his language of choice, data patterns his poetry. But what was happening here was equally captivating. The ray tracing showed entire wings and cell blocks changing position, pulling themselves around, reformatting the very architecture of the prison itself.
And here's our new contender, Siddiqui said, pointing at the monitor in front of her.
Slipher looked at what had appeared on the other monitor.
That's what 11240 is fighting?
Siddiqui nodded.
We've never matched it, she said. A couple of freelance bounty hunters brought it in from an abandoned spaceport in the Anoat system, along the Ison trade corridor.
She checked the screen. We think it's been used in previous illegal gladiatorial fights.
It's called I Know What It Is, the moon said.
Siddiqui glanced at him, clearly impressed.
You've seen the species before?
Not exactly, Slipher told her. The IBC was briefly involved in arbitrating a former client's involvement in a black market fur trading operation in the Outer Rim. Nothing we were personally involved in, of course, but apparently poachers and big game hunters had been tracking those creatures for decades.
He shook his head.
Mortality rate among the poachers was often worse than the creatures themselves. You're talking about a predator 2.5 meters tall, sometimes weighing 200 kilograms or more, with razor-sharp teeth and claws. They're singularly vicious creatures.
So you don't like the odds?
Siddiqui asked.
That thing against the Zabrak.
The moon blinked.
It hardly seems fair.
You haven't seen 11240 in a fight.
Respectfully, Warden, I don't believe that I have to.
We'll see.
Siddiqui indicated the overhead consoles, where whole lists of newly formatted data were streaming live through the galaxy. As always, bookmakers and casino bosses have the standard 5-minute window to evaluate the odds. We'll see what they think of the match in the off-world gambling combines. She watched as the displays showed bets, millions of credits pouring in on either side.
Looks like most of them agree with your assessment.
And you?
The moon asked.
How will the esteemed facilitators of Coghive 7 be betting?
We bet what the algorithm tells us.
Always?
Without fail.
And the algorithm is never wrong?
Slipher asked. Siddiqui turned to Dakarai. Her brother tapped in a series of commands and waited for the system to generate its verdict.
You're right, she said. It's going to be no contest.
Eleven. From the land of the ice and snow.
Maul got back to his cell with seconds to spare. The hatch slammed shut behind him, its mag bolts clamping tight with a vacuum-sealed thump. The panel of yellow lights had begun blinking red. All around him, the cell had already begun changing shape, the floor bowing below his feet. Wall plates sliding together with a now familiar grinding of alloy against alloy, constricting upward to merge with the ceiling. He breathed slowly in and out, and took a moment to review what had just happened. None of it made sense. Not that he'd expected it to. The ventilation duct ambush had worked as he'd expected, up to a point. He'd gone in fully anticipating a setup, and in this, the guard had not disappointed him. A man like Iram Radik hadn't survived this long without amassing an army of foot soldiers and lookouts, both inmates and guards, to mislead those who came looking for him. Was Zero working for Radik? Could it be that simple? And there was the more immediate question of why he hadn't been killed when the guard had activated the implanted charges in his heart. Had the dark side itself somehow intervened at the last second to save him? The implications of this possibility made Maul catch his breath. For all Darth Sidious's talk of his role as his apprentice and eventual successor, Maul still felt precious little connection to the Sith grand plan for the galaxy and his place within it. At the Dark Lord's command, he'd spent years training on Orsus and then on Coruscant in the Limerage building, enduring years of privation and the harshest imaginable discipline while awaiting his master's visits. And it was true. Sidious had spoken at length, intoxicatingly, about the dark side and its power, and more vaguely about the role Maul would play as he continued in his study of the Sith arts. In his most solitary moments, Maul had dared allow himself to hope for that moment when the Force would announce itself within him fully, intervening in a way that could not be mistaken for anything but sheer destiny. Could this be that moment? If that's true. There was a sudden lurch, and everything jerked forward on its axis. Maul seized the hand grips on either side of the bench, wedging himself in place, feeling hydrostatic pressure building in his face and neck as the entire chamber turned upside down, then tumbled sideways, pitching first to the left, then to the right. The cell spun, jerked left, barreled forward, jerked right again. Equilibrium abandoned him momentarily, and he tightened his grip. There was a sharp clank, and the chamber jerked to a halt. Something hissed, a hydraulic hatchway on the other side of one of the walls. But the hatch in front of him remained sealed. Then, through the wall, he heard it. A low, bronchial growl. Maul closed his eyes and listened. Whatever was on the other side of that hatch sounded bigger and hungrier than the creature he'd fought earlier. The growl had a sonorous, barrel-chested timbre that shook the air itself. He caught himself stretching out with his feelings and forced himself to withdraw, his master's voice burning in his ears from their final meeting on Coruscant.
If at any point you reveal your true identity as a Sith Lord,
Sidious had told him,
the entire mission will be worthless. Do you understand? You must not ever use the Force, no matter what the circumstances, or all will be lost. Do you grasp the magnitude of responsibility with which you are being trusted?
Maul did. All too well. He continued to hold absolutely still, listening, attuned to this moment. When the growl came again, it had risen in volume and intensity, and was now a thick snarl of fury. Metal chains clanked, rattling audibly, and something slammed against the wall with a sudden, deafening crash that shook the very bulkhead in front of him. There was another bellow, even louder than before, that he could feel in the hollow of his chest. The thing on the other side of the wall could smell him now. He was sure of it. It wouldn't be long now. The blinking lights went solid red, and the hatch opened. Maul remained motionless for a long moment, looking at it. The Wampa was in chains, bolted to the floor of its cell with heavy Nyla steel manacles around its legs, wrists, and throat. It stood almost 3 meters tall, its thick fur matted with filth, grease, and blood. One of its horns had snapped off mid-shaft, creating a jagged, ochre-colored dagger that curled only halfway around the right side of its head. Across its chest and abdomen, great swaths and patches of its white pelt had been ripped away to expose a puckered landscape of scar tissue. No doubt, the results of previous battles. Its lips wrinkled back to reveal rows of razor-sharp teeth, and spittle flew as it unleashed a bellow of hungry, frustrated rage and jerked at its restraints. Maul stood his ground. He gave himself a few seconds to evaluate the space where they would be fighting, the height of the ceiling, the diameter of the chamber, before turning back to stare the thing straight in its yellow, semi-sentient eyes.
Come then.
As if hearing his thoughts, the Wampa leaned down, gathering its strength, and at that moment, the manacles fell away. Maul never heard them hit the floor. The thing came at him. Maul leapt upward, dodging the initial attack. But the creature's massive arm swung around as it passed, its claws raking his back, ripping through flesh to gouge deep into the muscle along his spine. Maul felt his breath sucked from his lungs. A cruel, hot spike, even now he refused to think of it as pain, took hold of that entire side of his body, settling deep inside his nerve endings. The sudden smell of his own blood, sharp and coppery, filled the cell. Ducking low and then jumping for the ceiling, he felt hot liquid splashing down his leg, streaking the floor beneath his feet. He skidded, colliding with the wall in front of him. Was the cell actually smaller than it had been a moment ago? Had they already changed the shape of it around him? Maul took a breath and centered himself. Things were happening too quickly. He needed to slow it down. But the Wampa was already lunging again, its long, ape-like arms swinging, claws carving shadow, smashing him back into the curved steel wall as its jaws snapped inches away from his face. Maul slid down through the pool of his own blood, rolled free, and sprang up behind a thing faster than it could turn. Cocking back one arm, he tensed his shoulder and snapped his elbow into the base of the creature's skull, putting every ounce of upper body strength into a blow that should have shattered its neck. Nothing. It was like launching an elbow strike against solid stone covered with a layer of thick fur. Now the creature rounded on him again, arms upraised, towering to fill what felt like the entire cell. This time when it roared, the noise was more like a scream, a broken, phlegmy, bronchial shriek, as if the beast itself were somehow being tortured into attacking him. A flicker of realization passed through Maul's mind. Something's wrong with it. It's not. The Wampa's claw shot forward, slashing diagonally across Maul's face. The moment of clarity vanished in the hot rush of his own anger. Maul lowered his head, tightening up his core, hearing a new growl rising up. His own growl this time, emanating from the most deep and primal pit of his being. He opened himself to it. The deep venom of wrath taking control, fast and sleek and powerful. It would not be long now. Dismissing the bright slash of heat across his cheek and the bridge of his nose, as he had dismissed the odd shimmer of insight that had immediately preceded it, he fell into a low crouch, letting the Wampa come at him again. Its next move would be its last. Maul sprang straight upward into it, driving his horned head into the thing's lower jaw, pulverizing its mandible and slamming needle-sharp bone fragments into its cranial vault. Maul could actually feel the joints and fissures shattering inside the Wampa skull and knew intuitively that he dealt it a killing blow. But when he looked up again, the thing was on its feet and advancing toward him, howling and keening, a blind colossus. The headbutt had left its face a caved-in mass of blood and exposed bone. Somewhere within the cauldron of his anger, Maul felt a wave of disbelief. How was it still fighting? In defiance of all logic, it launched itself at him, all claws and teeth, a mass of unwavering death. Planting his feet against the wall behind him, Maul grabbed the thing by its remaining horn and put every ounce of his strength into twisting its head to the side. He wrenched the thing's head away from him and realized at the last second that he couldn't hold it back. Whatever was inside the Wampa was far more durable than he'd initially expected. The thing lunged again, sinking its teeth into Maul's shoulder, hitting crucial nerve bundles. All the strength disappeared from his hand and wrist, his body turning traitor at the worst possible moment. His arms fell slack, and he stumbled backward, staring up at his adversary. Darkness like he'd never known before was swarming through his peripheral vision, thick and pulsating, tightening with every second. For the first time, the impossible occurred to him. The prospect that he might actually lose. He lifted his head, wiped the blood from his eyes.
"Look at it."
A voice spoke from deep inside him. Not the voice of Sidious, but an instinct of self-preservation that far predated his service to his master.
"Do you not see?"
Maul looked. Something was wrong with the Wampa. Something deeply, profoundly wrong that went beyond genetically predisposed violence and a history of predatory killing. And just that quickly, he knew how to end it. Summoning whatever remained of his strength, Maul fired himself at the beast. Hooking his hands into claws, he plunged them through its fur, ripping into the soft tissue of its torso. The Wampa screeched and wailed. Maul barely heard it. Shoving his hands deeper, he sank both arms in, up to the elbow, beneath its ribcage, and into its thoracic cavity, groping until he found what he was looking for. The slick, pulsating mass of its heart. Maul grabbed it, laced his fingers together, and squeezed. The Wampa's heart burst between his fingers like a dense and fibrous flower. At once the thing tumbled backward with a kind of graceless shambling sprawl, slumping against the wall with a low moan, as if released from bondage beyond any chains or shackles. It gave a final braying cough, shuddered once, and fell still. Maul licked the blood from his teeth and spat. He stumbled back, tried to catch himself, and failed. Fatigue was already taking hold. A dense and miserable web that made the simplest motions difficult. The blood he'd lost was not so easily countered. The darkness was coming again, and this time he knew that he wouldn't be able to hold it off. The last thing he saw was the cell around him shifting and beginning to rise. Then, blackness.